You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
That is just a beautiful song. Playing some Beach Boys music at the top of each hour tonight, this Memorial Day weekend. Most of the Beach Boys songs are fun, happy, upbeat, cheerful, and that one certainly is too. Beautiful harmonies is all their music had. But that one's a little bittersweet. I actually posted that song for y'all who come to the website every day or every week, thepoliticalcesspool.org, you know. That on Sunday mornings, I like to post a song each week, something that I like, something that I may be listening to that particular week. And I just like to do that because, of course, as you know, I like to share myself with the audience. I like for you to know what makes me tick, what I like, what I'm into. I like you to know about my family, my personal life, and all of that stuff. And so also, it's just nice to take a momentary departure on a Sunday morning, play a little music, have a little music featured at the website, breaks up the intensity of it all. And that one was posted. I can remember, of course, I was born after the Beach Boys were popular, even though they still tour. I wasn't born until 1980. So when they were in their heyday in the 60s, I wasn't even around yet. But I can remember listening to that song as a boy. And, you know, certainly it's changed as I'm older now, listening as I continue to listen to that song in different phases of my own life. Looking back now as a man in his mid-30s, listening to that song has a different meaning than someone who was eager to grow from a boy into a man, as I can remember listening to it in the 80s and 90s. But I'll tell you this on this holiday weekend. I am a very lucky and a very blessed man for a lot of reasons, not the least of which, of course, is because I have all of you, dear people, ladies and gentlemen, tuned in every week, supporting the work of this radio program. I will tell you the honest to God's truth, and I probably said this before on the show, but I'll say it again. I look in the mirror when I wake up every morning, and you may think this is hyperbole, you may think that I'm exaggerating, but strike me dead if this isn't so. I look in the mirror every day, and I can honestly say there is no one else I would rather be. I'm so happy and content in my life. God has given me a great life, a meaningful life, a wonderful family, a beautiful wife, great mother to my children, the best kids in the world. I know so many people are mad at the world, mad at themselves, mad at everybody. There's certainly things that I oppose and things that I stand against and things that I want to change and things that I'm fighting for and things that I believe in. But truly, and even though we may have to take harsh actions in order to correct a lot of the problems that our society faces, everything that motivates me is motivated from either a love or a defense of the things that I love. And I've lived a life up until this point where maybe there was a few things I could have done differently or done better, but I don't regret anything. I don't regret anything. I don't wish I'd married someone different. I don't wish I had different parents. I don't wish I had different friends. I don't regret any aspect of my childhood or of my upbringing. My grandparents were the most wonderful people any grandson could have ever asked for, all four of them. I have just had an incredibly fulfilling life. And obviously one thing that makes my life unique is being able to do this radio program. I love doing this show now as much as I did 13 years ago when I went on the air for the first time. I love the battle. Certainly, I don't enjoy the media's treatment of me, but it's just part of it. And I love the struggle. I love the journey. So I embrace that too. But I am. And I think we reflect on our anniversaries, either if it's our personal wedding anniversaries or the anniversary for me with this radio program or at Christmas or at some of these other holidays. And it's just always a good occasion, a good time to take stock at where you are in your life as the years continue to roll by, and they go by faster every year, don't they? But this time, as always, and I tell my parents this, every Mother's Day, every Father's Day, every Christmas card I write to my parents, who thankfully are still alive. They're getting older. But I tell them, thank you. Thank you for the way you raised me. And thank you for the childhood you gave me. And obviously, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be who I am today. I, at some point, every individual in their own lives make their own decisions and go forward down their own path. But so much of who we are is heritable. It comes from our genetics. And obviously, as a part of it comes from our upbringing as well. It's those two things, you know, nature and nurture, but it's both of those things. And I gotta say it, I'm just a happy guy. I've always been an upbeat, gregarious, effusive guy, certainly passionate when the occasion calls for it, either in my personal life or in the political realm. Yes, I get angry sometimes, that's true, but all in all, and to say it again, there's nobody on earth I would rather be. I could have money. Yeah, James, the show's never going to make you rich. No, that's for sure. I'm just thankful that the show has enough support out there to where it can pay for itself and sustain itself to where I don't have to take away from my family in order to keep it on the air. And thanks to you good people, you great people who contribute to this show, we're financially solvent. We do have of course, that's tenuous. It always is in this business. And we do have our second quarter fundraising drive that's going to start up next week, June 1st, run through June. We're going to have a great incentive. We'll talk about that. We'll unroll that next week. So we do need your continued support to stay on the air. But for 13 years, you've sustained us, and I don't have any reason to believe that that's going to change next month. Please don't let it change next month. But I love doing this show. Bottom line, I love doing this show. I love you. I love my family. I love the Christian faith of my fathers. And isn't that what this is all about? Isn't that what it's all about? Just having a life where you can be content and you can feel as though you've been a good husband and a good father and a good brother and a good son, and you feel as though you've contributed something, either by having children. Certainly, that's the most important thing, but even having an opportunity to do something like this and to be with you every Saturday night. Folks, I want you to know I love each and every one of you, dear ladies and gentlemen out there. I do love you. I fight for you. Continue to fight for you. Thank you for putting your faith and trust in me. We got to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about what Memorial Day means to me. Be a little bit different than what you're thinking. Stay tuned. Good
sense, innocence. We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Every day I wake up, it's almost like a battle. It's like, well, you know, I could do this today. I could go get drunk.
I don't like beer. I'm an alcoholic because I can't, you know, stop drinking because it alters my mind, but I don't like alcohol.
And I had to keep telling myself that, you know, this is okay. Everybody does this. My whole life was just a big lie.
I can't control if I do take that drink because I'm an addict and I can't.
I admit it's messed me up.
I don't have a very good memory. I have a hard time remembering things when I learn them.
I can't concentrate on one thing for more than 5 or 10 minutes. You have fun until you hit rock bottom and it's not fun anymore.
I remember sitting in assemblies about drugs and I thought, that's never going to happen to me. I'm never going to be like those kids. But here I am.
The choices that you make are choices you're going to have to live with.
A public service message from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Many of you have heard me talk about my vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this vigor stuff about? Well, vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called vigor. Would you like to improve your vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free vigor score test today.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Okay, well, as everyone knows, it is Memorial Day, and I was thinking about this earlier this week, and I just couldn't help but getting a little upset about it all for a lot of reasons. Memorial Day, first of all, is a tragic holiday. It's a tragic celebration of brave men who gave their lives in service to a traitorous government and wars they never should have been fighting. That's what it is. As I say before, it doesn't take away the valor or the gallantry or the heroism that these men were attempting to apply. What's tragic is that ultimately it was wasted. And you can say, well, that's being hard, that's being unpatriotic. These people died for something they believed in. Yes, they did. But is it better just to pretend that those sacrifices were worth something good? Or should we make sure that no other of our brothers go out and die for what? For the regime? For those traitors in Washington? I got to tell you, the last American soldiers who died fighting for our freedoms were wearing gray and marching barefoot. It's the last time American soldiers fought in a war worth fighting. No war. After the war our Southern forebears fought to protect their people and their land, no war since then should any Americans have fought in. Yes, that includes World War I and World War I-B. Shouldn't have fought them. And so, Memorial Day, I think of that, and it really elicits a very strong emotion towards our government. And let's talk about that flag, by the way. You can't go anywhere without seeing a bunch of those American flags all over the place. And I know some of the people who wave them have good intentions, and some of them may consider themselves to be patriots or conservatives or Christians or some combination thereof, and I'm sure that many of them are. But how could anyone proudly wave an American flag? I just don't get it. And you'll say, well, it's just because you're so caught up in the war your great-great-great-grandfathers fought in, and it's just sour grapes over the war between the states. I won't lie to you. That's a part of it. That's a part of it, but it is just a part of it. After we suffered through Reconstruction in the South, we put the South back together again to a large degree. And I think you could even in many ways argue that the South in the 1950s was just about as good as life ever got in America at any time. I think those were the halcyon days of American culture, that Americana culture that we think about when we walk into a Cracker Barrel store. That was in the South in the early 1950s. That was the zenith. That was the best it ever got here. And it's been all downhill from there. But that was certainly almost even 100 years after my ancestors fought that war for their independence and lost that war, tragically, sadly. But even then, it was still pretty good. We were able to rebuild the South in our image for the most part up until, as Keith always brings up, Brown versus Board. And then, of course, in the mid-60s, it was really all downhill with a quickness after the Immigration Act and the Swindle White's legislation and all of that. And then we just got subjugated again. And as one of our dear friends up in the Nashville area that texted just a moment ago, I'll read it. If I can pull it up here, talking about how it wasn't the boomers or the so-called greatest generation. Not everyone went quietly. It took the full force of the Yankee government, even in the 1950s and 60s, to subjugate the South yet again. But even if you have no dog in that war that was fought in the 1860s, or even in the turmoil where America really took a drastic turn in the 1950s and 60s. Even if you completely discount that, let's just say you are just a run-of-the-mill, generic, conservative Christian. You don't see race. You don't see any of the things that really animate this program. You're just in church every Sunday, God-fearing, tax-paying American. Count yourself as a conservative. You're the one that's going to be flying those flags this weekend, not me. But I would ask you, why? Why would you? Honestly, I got to be completely honest with you folks, because that's the only gear I've got. I don't have, well, I'm going to be honest tonight with the audience. I'm going to be 100% honest or 80% honest or just 20% honest tonight, because this is a difficult subject. No, that's not the way I do things. I'm 100% honest on 100% of the topics, 100% of the time I'm on the air. And in that spirit, I will tell you that the American flag disgusts me. I don't like seeing it when I go to the Target. I don't like seeing all this stuff out there. It did subjugate my ancestors, that's true. But even now, so many decades later, it sanctions every degeneracy imaginable. And this gets me back to the conservative Christian run-of-the-mill normie out there. That is the flag that sanctions abortion. That is the flag that has sanctioned sodomy, the eradication of Jesus Christ from our schools and public squares. How could you ever salute that flag? Don't misunderstand me. I respect and love the flag that flew when Francis Scott Key wrote his inspirational anthem. But today's flag makes me sick at the very sight of it. I won't allow it on my property. I've abjured the realm. On the 4th of July, will I shoot fireworks? Will I remember the promise that America had at its founding and during the revolution that was led by George Washington and those great men, those Christian men from Europe? Absolutely. I'll be out there, and I'll be out there with fireworks and a hamburger, and I'll be celebrating the founding of this nation. But I'm not going to celebrate what that flag stands for now. and what this government has become and what it's done to the good people of this country. That, what good does that flag stand for? You tell me that. The bombing of countless nations for no reason, these wars we fought under that flag since 1861 through 1865. Yes, the flag as it stood at the inception of our republic, I love that flag. But that is not that flag anymore. And it sure as hell isn't that government anymore. And I don't know. I mean, maybe in an alternate universe, if we could recapture the government, that flag would mean something else to me. But I can't help what my perception of that flag is and what my reaction is when I see it. I don't like it. If I'm wrong, light me up on Twitter. Send me an email. Let me know how you feel. Now, listen, if you think differently, dear audience member, that's fine. It's not going to hurt my feelings. I know this is a different type of take than you're hearing on Memorial Day weekend. I think, you know, I memorialize the lost brave men. Sure, I'm sorry their lives were wasted. That's what Memorial Day means to me. But the flag, 4th of July, waving the flag, Memorial Day, waving the flag. If you want to do it, and it's coming from the right place, and I understand where you may be coming from with that. I don't think poorly of you or hold you in contempt. To each their own. But that's just how I feel. Send me a tweet. Send me an email. Let me know if I'm way off base here. We'll be back right after this.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With Liberty News this hour, I'm Dennis Daly. Former Senator Joe Lieberman, no longer under consideration for FBI director. In short, the optics were bad. You see, Lieberman worked for the law firm that President Trump had retained to navigate the Russian investigation. Lieberman would have been perceived as an ally in the FBI. There were other additional downsides in appointing him. He had no law enforcement experience. Of course, he's a Democrat, a good friend of Senator John McCain. Some say the president needs to appoint someone who will uphold the law and be fully independent in the investigation. In what some people say appears to be another instance of political correctness gone wrong, two of the co-hosts of The View, Sonny Hostin and Whoopi Goldberg, saw the horrifying terror attack in Manchester as an opening to criticize President Trump. They objected to the president as referring to Islamic terrorists who targeted a venue full of mostly young women and girls as evil losers. They claimed the characterization was unpresidential, and they seemed to prefer the Obama approach to using the phrase radical Islamic terrorism when talking about terror attacks. You're listening to LibertyNewsDaily.com.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. If you want a win-win opportunity for patriots, we present a solution. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. When it comes to books, videos, health food, and natural products, please do business with the good guys today. Phone-in orders available by calling 877-817-9829 or purchase online at thepowermall.com.
With Liberty News, I'm Dennis Daly.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, folks, that last segment, certainly me being very frank, very candid with you. And keep in mind, the majority of the members of the Political Cesspool staff have served in the armed forces. Scoop, Winston, Eddie, Art, our former producers. So more people who are on the staff than not have served in uniform of one of the branches of the military. So, hey, this is not a denigration of those who serve. I don't know how well the government has allocated those sacrifices, but it doesn't take away the heroism, the valor, the gallantry. And I mentioned that even at the top of that last segment. But just something for you to chew on, folks, ladies and gentlemen, this Labor Day weekend. Of course, the America that we know today wasn't always that way. Jared Taylor has released a video at American Renaissance describing the racial thinking of the founding fathers and of other great Americans. Since colonial times and until the mid-20th century, Americans had a vivid sense of the significance of race, and it took for granted that the United States must always be firmly rooted in Europe. Jared, in this video you're about to hear, we're going to play it right now as a little Memorial Day weekend treat for you, warns that today's egalitarian multicultural orthodoxies are a dangerous departure from the more thoughtful views that once shaped our great nation. Here's Jared.
Hello, I'm Jared Taylor with American Renaissance. Most people think that the United States was, from the very beginning, dedicated to the idea of racial equality. Yes, they say, there was slavery and segregation, but we were always working to fulfill the promise of all men are created equal. Of course, Thomas Jefferson, who wrote those words, was a slaveholder who didn't think the races were equal at all. But that phrase from the Declaration of Independence will haunt his memory forever. Not many people know that in 1776, there were black slaves in all 13 colonies and in the entire New World, from Canada to the tip of South America. In 1770, 40% of the white households in Manhattan owned slaves, and there were more slaves in the colony of New York than in Georgia. 9 of the first 11 presidents were slaveholders. The two exceptions were John Adams and John Quincy Adams. Jefferson thought slavery was a bad thing and that slaves would eventually be freed, but he wanted freed slaves sent back to Africa. There's a quotation from him on the wall of the Jefferson Memorial that goes like this. "Nothing is more certainly written in the book of fate than that these people are to be free." Well, in the original, Jefferson didn't stop there, adding, "Nor is it less certain that the two races equally free cannot live in the same government." That part has been conveniently forgotten. He wanted blacks deported and separated from whites so that they would be, and I quote, "beyond the reach of mixture." James Madison agreed. He wanted the U.S. government to buy up every slave and deport them. After he served as president, he ran the American Colonization Society, which was set up to send blacks back to Africa. At the inaugural meeting of the society, Henry Clay explained its purpose, quote, "to rid our country of a useless and pernicious, if not dangerous, portion of the population." Some of the most famous early Americans were not just members of the Colonization Society, they were officers. Besides Madison, there were Andrew Jackson, Daniel Webster, Stephen Douglas, William Seward, Francis Scott Key, Winfield Scott, and John Marshall. James Monroe worked so hard to help freed American slaves leave the country and establish Liberia that grateful Liberians named their capital Monrovia in his memory. The founders wanted blacks out and whites in. After the U.S. Constitution was ratified, the very first United States Congress had to decide who could be an American. They passed a law that said only, quote, "free white persons" could be citizens of the new country. Blacks couldn't be citizens even if they had been living in the colonies for generations. It took an amendment to the Constitution in 1868 for blacks to become citizens. And American Indians didn't finally become U.S. citizens until 1924. From colonial times on, there was strong opposition to mixed-race marriage. Massachusetts prohibited miscegenation from 1705 to 1843 and repealed the ban only because people thought it wasn't needed. They thought the idea of mixing was so repellent that no one would do it, even if it were legal. Of the 50 United States, 44 at one time had laws prohibiting interracial marriage. White people did not want blacks to vote. In 1855, there were 31 states in the Union, but blacks could vote only in four. All of them were in New England, and together they had only 4% of the total black population of the country. The federal government made sure that blacks couldn't vote in the territories. When Oregon joined the Union in 1859, its constitution stated that no black person could come, live in, or even visit the state. But Abraham Lincoln, the great emancipator, didn't he believe in racial equality? No. During the Lincoln-Douglas debates, he said this, "I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of making voters or jurors out of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. There is a physical difference between the white and black races which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality." Lincoln agreed with Jefferson. He wanted to free the slaves and then deport them. In 1862, Lincoln had the Civil War on his hands, but he was so worried about what to do with free blacks that he named a commissioner on immigration and sent him off to look for countries that would take in the blacks he wanted to be rid of. He also sent a message to Congress calling for free blacks to be deported. U.S. presidents usually say only bland, non-controversial things. Well, this is what some of them said about race. James Garfield wrote, "I have a strong feeling of repugnance when I think of the Negro being made our political equal, and I would be so glad if they could be colonized, sent to heaven, or got rid of in any decent way." Theodore Roosevelt wrote that he had, quote, "not been able to think out any solution to the terrible problem offered by the presence of the Negro on this continent." As for Indians, he said, quote, "I don't go so far as to think that the only good Indians are the dead Indians, but I believe 9 out of 10 are, and I shouldn't inquire too closely into the health of the 10th. William Howard Taft once told a group of black college students, "Your race is adapted to be a race of farmers, first, last, and for all times." Warren Harding thought the races would always be separate. Quote, "This is not a question of social equality, but a question of recognizing a fundamental, eternal, inescapable difference." Harry Truman wrote, "I am strongly of the opinion that Negroes ought to be in Africa, yellow men in Asia, and white men in Europe and America." He also referred to the black servants in the White House as, quote, "an army of coons." Dwight Eisenhower told Supreme Court Justice Earl Warren he understood why Southerners wanted segregated schools. They didn't want, quote, "their sweet little girls to sit in schools alongside some big black box." He said that what he regretted most about his 8 years as president was sending federal troops to Little Rock, Arkansas to enforce school integration. It's not until John Kennedy, elected in 1960, that we have a president with views on race that just might be considered acceptable today. Because now, of course, we are supposed to think that race doesn't even exist. And even if it did, it would be immoral to base any decision on race. As I think I've made clear, this is a very recent way of thinking. From colonial times right up through the mid-20th century, virtually all white people believed race was an essential part of the American identity. They understood that people of different races are different and build different kinds of societies. They thought only Europeans would make the United States the kind of country that they would want to pass on to their children. So, there are two views. There is the consensus on race that lasted for more than 300 years, and there's today's view, that races are perfectly equal and interchangeable, and that Americans can become black, Hispanic, Asian, Muslim, Hindu, anything at all, And not only will it be still America, it'll be better than ever. Well, which view is correct? Just look around. Read the news. I think you'll find the answer. Thanks for watching. And be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and visit our website at amren.com.
Is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's LibertyNewsRadio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, folks, well, that last segment by Jared Taylor, pretty strong stuff, certainly. There's no doubt about that. That was strong stuff, a punch to the gut or the face or whatever you want to say. But what was the purpose in us deciding to play that tonight on the program? Now, you may have agreed with some of the quotes that Jared provided from these historical figures. You may have disagreed with some of them. You may have agreed with some and disagreed with others, been somewhere down the middle. But the point in playing that is, the America as we know it today was not the America at its founding. It was not the America that you would have found at its founding. It wasn't even the America you would have found in 1965. So all of this stuff that America has always been, this multicultural polyglot, this bastion of conflicting people and conflicting faiths and ideas, it wasn't that at all. It wasn't that until really the last couple of decades. It certainly wasn't that at its founding. And don't take my word for it. And that's why Jared did the research and did that video and provided the referenced quotes from the founders of this nation. What they view, their views on race are a heck of a lot harder than mine, and mine are pretty stout. But yeah, that their stuff was just really strong, and that's the way it was. And I think certainly it was a lot better then than it is now. And that's just an understatement to say the very least. But this stuff that America was always a place of ideas, and anybody could come and be an American, and you didn't have to be white, you didn't have to be a Christian, you didn't have to be any of these things, that's just not true. That's not true in the way that they thought, and it's not true in the way that the laws were back then at all. And that's why we played that, because you deserve to know the truth. Now, you could say, you know what, I think the America of 2017 is a lot better than the America of 1776 or the America of 1860 or the America of 1950. You can say that if you want to, but what you can't say, if you're being honest, is that the America as we know it today is the way that the founding fathers intended it to be. That is a lie from the pit of hell. And that's why I played that clip tonight, even with the strong comments from the people Jared was quoting. A quick 7 years. That's one of the items that we had up on the blog. My book was released. You know, we do love anniversaries around here. We always have a big party. On the air, at least, during our anniversary of going on the air in October. Every now and then we do a little get-together. But we love Christmas. We love the anniversary of the program. We certainly love our wedding anniversaries. Well, I'm a big nostalgic. Yeah, they're trying to ruin Christmas, too, but we're not going to let them do that. But I am a nostalgic and sentimental guy in many ways. And so I certain things that happened in my life, I always celebrate the anniversary of it. And I don't know if the publishing of my book is one of those things. Sometimes I forget when it came out. But I was reminded a couple of weeks ago that it was released on May 26th, 2010. That was 7 years ago yesterday. I do remember being at a conference. We debuted the book at a Council of Conservative Citizens conference. That was the first place the book went on sale. It was in the summer, obviously May of 2010. And we had a live remote broadcast, as we used to do with the council conferences every year, from the floor of that venue. And that was when the book was released, at that conference, and then, of course, to the larger listening audience on the radio program that night. That was 7 years ago yesterday. And I can remember going to a computer in the Hotel Business Center with Bill Rowland, who was there with me on that trip. And Bill and I were logged in. And of course, every time someone bought a book, I was notified. And I remember opening up my email and just seeing pages and pages of book sales. It just really blew me away, because I didn't know what to expect, because I'd certainly never written a book before then and have never written one since then. But I remember opening up my email after the show. I think it was the day after the show, because we stayed up and visited with fans of the show there at the conference. Anyway, check the email for the first time the day after the show, and it's just all of these book sales. Well, that was 7 years ago, and that has been a fast 7 years. And it was endorsed by a lot of people: Kevin McDonald, Steve Saylor, Richard Spencer, all the way back in 2010. I'm still hanging out with these guys. Richard wrote this very nice endorsement of the book that actually appears in the book. It was three of the people that I asked to write endorsements to appear in the book were Richard Spencer, Dr. Virginia Abernethy of Vanderbilt University, and Dr. Paul Gottfried of Elizabethtown College in Pennsylvania. But Richard Spencer was one of those three. Richard wrote this: Peter Brimelow once observed that the modern definition of a racist is someone who's winning an argument with a liberal. As James Edwards demonstrates in his enjoyable book, this definition has recently been expanded to cover conservative white people and even white person who meets with other white people in groups. Linguistically speaking, the word is borderline babble. Politically speaking, it's a powerful weapon used to squash dissent and humiliate traditional Americans. Luckily, James is here to show us how to fight back. European Americans, the majority that dares not speak its name, should be proud of their identity and cultural heritage. Being racist means holding views that were once characterized as being American. And I think that endorsement by Richard Spencer kind of ties up what we've been covering in the last couple of segments as we reflect on the meaning of Memorial Day, even the flag, and certainly the founding, the thoughts of some of our founding fathers and even presidents all the way as recently as Truman that Jared was talking about in the last segment. Being racist means holding views that were once characterized as being American. Well, the fundamental message of my book was, and still is, for God's sake, quit worrying about being called a racist by people who hate you. If by some chance you haven't bought my book in the last 7 years, or you might have a friend who wants a copy, they're still current. There's sure been a lot of material I could have added in a 2.0 version in the last 7 years. That's for sure. But the book is still a nice gift. And this is the 7th anniversary of its release. So you can go to Amazon.com, type in racism, schmacism, and you can buy the book. One more thing I want to cover. One of my favorite new writers who's burst onto the scene is a guy by the name of Travis Hale. And he is a fundamentalist Christian, the founding editor of AltRightChristian.com. He has an amazing article that I posted to thepoliticalcesspool.org just yesterday. It's entitled Christianity Improves Our People. I think he titled it Christianity, Paganism, and Guilt. But it deals with the criticism that Christianity gets from some of the non-believers in our groups. And I can't tell you the whole article because it'd be too long to break down. I don't have enough time in what remains of the show this evening. But I would tell you to read it. It's a very interesting treatment on the whole argument that Christianity has instilled a sense of guilt into white people, and it's the reason for our downfall. The first sentence of Travis Hale's article reads, "Alt-right folks who dislike Christianity often cite Christian theology's legitimization of guilt as crippling to whites worldwide." His last sentence reads, "Based upon what I've shown you, what you can't say is that Christianity created the problem of guilt and sin. Arguably, it solved it." Now, what's between the first and the last sentence of that article is what you need to read tonight, either at thepoliticalcesspool.org or altrightchristian.com. Great to see traditional evangelical Christians continuing to carry the banner of the cross. Certainly a banner that can never be tainted. And check that out at our website just as soon as you can. Scoop was going to call in tonight. He got called into work instead, and I'm just now getting the message on that. But that's okay. We had some content to cover. Anyway, he wanted me to read a couple of things from his script. I know I only have a minute left, but I'm going to try to honor Scoop's wish here and see if I can pull it up here. There ain't nothing like scrambling. I'm not scrambling. I'm trying to do Scoop a favor. Let me see if I can find his email here. I know it doesn't make for the best radio, but let's see what he's talking about. Greg Allman died. Yes, we should have played an Allman Brothers song tonight. Yes, I know, Scoop. It looks like somebody else that he's a fan of died this week, Chris Cornell. But let's get down to where Scoop, the rubber meets the road. The biggest scandal of the year here doesn't involve Donald Trump, but a Democrat, so it's a non-story. Debbie Wasserman Schultz has a Pakistani IT staffer, I guess she doesn't believe in hiring Americans, who committed massive data breaches with classified material. A laptop computer allegedly belonging to Schultz was found in another building and is being used in a criminal case. This week, the congresswoman used a budget hearing to grill Capitol Police Chief Matthew Verdoza about lost and found property. The Wicked Witch of South Florida didn't come out and say it was hers, but she did a poor job of covering it up. When Chief Vanda Rosa refused to give up the laptop, the lousy lawmaker threatened the Portland police chief with consequences. I didn't know about this story. Wow. Well, we'll let Scoop break it down for you next week, but we're out of time. Love you, folks. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Hey, fly the flag if it means something to you. I know it's coming from a good place if you do it. I love you. I'll see you next week. Good night. God bless you.